Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Media 1099 podcast. My name is Michael Durr, here with Robert Husky, as always. We just wrapped up a great interview with Genevieve Davis, who is a Southern California lifestyle photographer. Robert, how are you today, and what were your thoughts based off of this interview?
I'm good. This interview was awesome. It was amazing. I love talking with Genevieve. I think her outlook on life and that style of kind of a little bit of a nomad and free going really translates towards her work, but she still has the common sense behind and like the ability to, you know, think of progress from maybe not just the next day to like a year out, you know. And I love talking to her about her transition from being like a 9-to-5er to a freelancer. I think her thought process on that was really stunning for me. How about you?
Yeah. Anytime that I get to talk to somebody about making that transition, because I've done it myself and I know my experience, but to hear other people's experience is always really interesting and revealing. I loved what she talked about, how about being sort of minimalist in a lot of ways has translated to her business, to her art, like, you know, not worrying too much about having all these extra overheads. So that is a great way to prepare yourself if you're going to make this leap. And I do think it's a leap. So, hearing her talk about that, just hearing her talk about, you know, just in, how intuitive like her career seems to be, listening to your gut and following your instincts in a lot of ways, whether that's through your own shooting style and your mood boards, as opposed to having something listed out, you know, 30 times. And as well as just knowing when to take those jumps, when to take the risks for your career is really great affirmations to listen to.
Yeah. And another thing is that I thought was very interesting is her kind of her momentum cycle of personal work transitioning into like client work and being
exactly
in the right place at the right time and not like necessarily forcing it, but just like, oh, this is what I love to do. And then my photos reflect that. And then now I could reach out or have clients reach out to me. And I think that is just the way to do it, you know?
No, you're 100% right. I think she is 100% right. Like that, and I've heard it a million times, but you know, when I hear it again, from somebody who does as great a job as she does, it hits a little bit heavier. So, you know, like, yeah, put the time into your personal projects, do the work that you want to be hired for. And, that will come. You have to be good. You have to be consistent at it, but like, that's just a great thematic message to take away and to implement into your own life.
Yeah, no, I think this interview is great. I think the listeners are going to enjoy this as soon as we hear a quick word from our sponsors. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Media 1099 podcast. Mike and I have a very special guest today, Genevieve Davis. She is a Southern California native who is a full-time freelance photographer. She considers herself a motorcyclist and surfing enthusiast. I believe her work showcases that style as well as her creativity and passion for people, finding light, and being an outdoors woman. In 2018, she transitioned from being the in-house photographer at Vans headquarters into a full-time freelance photographer. Genevieve, welcome, and thank you for being on the show today.
Thank you guys so much. I'm so stoked to be here.
It's awesome having you. I appreciate your time. What has this, we like to ask this question right off the bat. What has quarantine, what has 2020 in general been like for you as you've kind of navigated this space?
It's been a lot of things. it's been extremely challenging. But I think it's also been extremely beneficial for me personally. And I don't say that to minimize like or romanticize a pandemic. Certainly like death and right. The loss of your work is tragic for many. But I do feel like this is a very unique time and space in the world in the way that like the entire world has been put on pause. And it's a very unique opportunity to kind of go inward and have time to reflect and have things that maybe you're too busy to think about in your day to day, like bubble up and ultimately like more self-awareness, which I think makes the world a better place.
Yeah. Just personal reflection, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I think initially it was like very shocking kind of, everything halting, and now it's kind of transitioning now that we're like almost in September into this kind of new normal type of thing, where I think gardening and self-help is really kind of taking a boost in people's normal day-to-day life, you know.
Yeah.
I follow you on Instagram, and I've noticed you kind of have quite a garden going.
Oh my gosh.
How did that come about?
Yeah, I got really into gardening over quarantine. I was living in a van, a Sprinter van, prior to quarantine. Like, literally, my fiance and I moved in together, like, I think 2 or 3 days before California just, like, shut down. And so we, like, are both, like, pretty minimalists. And we had, like, no furniture, no bed, nothing in the house. I was like, are we going to have to, like, sleep in sleeping bags on our floor, like, for the first couple months or whatever? I mean, luckily, we were able to get stuff, like, just literally, like, the day before, like, stores closed, which was such a weird experience. But I've always wanted to grow my own food. It's just, like, something that I've been interested in for a long time. The idea of, like, food sovereignty and also being, like, healthier for you and better for the environment. And Michael, my partner, he has, like, some experience in a garden. He grew, like, a beautiful garden last year, like, just in the deck of his house. So when quarantine first started and, you know, we were all stuck at home, of course, like, the first thing we thought was, like, well, let's, like, take this time to build a garden. So we built, like, planter boxes that we had repurposed, like, above-ground planter boxes, and we used, like, a lot of different pots and stuff that he just had left over, and we were able to grow, like, a pretty, like, luscious jungle food garden over the last couple of months. It's been, like, so rewarding, and it's taught me so much. But yeah, we have a million cucumbers.
I wanted to jump on what you just talked about, which is, like, you identify yourself as sort of a minimalist.
Yeah.
And I love that space. Like, it's something that I aspire to be. Like, I feel like I have that spirit. It's hard to get into. How do you think that has impacted your approach to, like, your art and your business? Does it apply the same way? Like, do you find ways to cut out unnecessary fat in those aspects?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I actually, for most of my career up until last year, I owned one lens and one body, which,
oh,
like,
wow,
might be too much minimalism. But I've been successful as a photographer, so it worked for me. Like, that's my brand. I've since, like, now have two bodies and two lenses, you know? So yeah, I feel like my approach has been very kind of, like, skinny. I was a product photographer at Vans. So, like, I've worked with lights and I'm, like, pretty good with all that stuff. Like, I know how to use equipment and I enjoy using studio equipment and all that stuff. But I feel like I'm at my best when everything's kind of stripped down. Right. And I also feel like that's why clients hire me a lot of times, is because I don't need, like, a huge crew to get, like, a really good shoot done. And I don't need a ton of equipment. And I also, like, get to keep a lot more money that way.
Right.
Like, I would never not bring somebody on or not rent equipment that I needed to save money. I would always, you know, I'm at a certain standard. But for most of what I do, I only need one lens and one camera, maybe two lenses, you know? And I feel like my work is reflective of a professional. So I don't feel, like, insecure about that.
No, it absolutely is. And if we haven't mentioned it already, it's GenevieveDavisPhoto.com, where you can find her work. What's your Instagram really quickly?
It's at Genevieve_Davis.
Right, there you go. And I think you have fantastic work. And I love what you're saying there. I mean, people are hiring you because you don't come with a whole lot of, like, unnecessary, like, baggage. You don't have to have 10 extra people on set. You don't have to have, you know, all this invoiced for equipment. You know, you can run and gun in a lot of ways, but also just focus more on the creativity with having a camera and a lens. It's simple as that, right?
Yeah. And a lot of what I shoot too is, like, in the motorcycle industry. So it's helpful to just, like, be able to hop on the back of a bike with one camera and one lens and be able to get, like, really good shots, or to be, like, at an event and not need, like, a ton of extra shit to, like, get the shot, you know?
Mm-hmm. Out of curiosity, what's the one lens?
I have a 24-70 2.8.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. And then I bought a 7200 last year because I was just renting that a lot. And I love that lens.
Yeah, I think the 70-200 is like my favorite go-to lens.
I love that lens more than I love my 24-70 now. I use that so much.
Really quick, you mentioned about hopping on the back of a motorcycle for, you know, to cover either getting shots or for a company or an event. What's that experience like? I've never done that before.
I've seen one other woman do this. I don't know that it's like an official way to get shots. Definitely like, don't try this at home, but I ride motorcycles, so I feel pretty comfortable. And normally I would partner with somebody that I really trust, hop on the back of their bike, like reversed basically. So I'm like backwards on the back of a bike, and I would shoot people riding as the motorcycle's riding. As I've gotten like older, I now try to hire like an open truck, but sometimes that's not available to me. And sometimes it's just like kind of like a run and gun situation. So I have to use what's available, and what's available is my friend with her motorcycle next to me. It's super fun, but it's definitely dangerous.
Yeah. Who handles the liability insurance here? You or the clients? I mean,
Yeah, I know on that. We'll skip that question. Okay.
I had a question for you. Like, you know, I find that the best lifestyle photographers tend to be by nature wanderers, you know, adventure seekers, nature enthusiasts, which I don't want to peg you into that hole, but your work at the very least feels like it's coming from that spirit.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's like this deeper level of connection that you have with your lifestyle photography because you live that life, because you spent time traveling and backpacking and immersing yourself in this canvas, as opposed to somebody else that doesn't really do that except for when they're on a job?
Yeah, I feel definitely like, I mean, for anything, right? If you're part of the culture, like you have a deeper understanding of what that experience or that space feels like to you. And I think that definitely lends like a helpful hand in knowing what to shoot, or like, I think a lot of what I'm shooting too is, or capturing, is like a feeling. And that's like a genuine feeling that I'm experiencing in that moment. Whereas if you're coming from an outside space, not to say you can't get beautiful imagery, because of course, like not everything I shoot is like right up my alley, but it's definitely helpful to be part of that culture and like know what you're looking for to some degree. I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does perfectly.
I definitely think there's like some intuitive nature, like you kind of just know, okay, this bend is coming around, or like the bike's going to be leaning this way. I mean, I just think your photos of moto babes is awesome, you know, like thank that world. It's very empowering, it's very colorful, it's very creative, just gorgeous photos. Was that one specific project, or did that kind of snowball from maybe one client to another? Oh.
That is kind of a crazy story, because like when I first started shooting women's motorcycling, like that was just because, again, like that was part of my culture. Like I'm a female motorcyclist. I've been riding for about 10 years now. And I was kind of in the right place at the right time. Like there was this event, like 7 or 8 years ago now, called Babes Ride Out. And it goes every year. But the first one was Babes in Borrego. And it was literally like two girls on Instagram who posted, hey, we're going camping in Anza Borrego. If you're a woman and you ride, come meet us. And I went to that, and there was like 50 women who showed up, which was at the time like so crazy, because I probably only knew like two other women who rode at that time. Mm-hmm. And so to have like more than two girlfriends who rode motorcycles who were like around my same age, it just like completely opened up my world. So I started photographing my friends, basically. Like we would go on rides or go to events, and I would just shoot because I'm a photographer. And that personal project just kind of snowballed into work. Like I started getting hired to shoot women's events, and then commercial photography. Like I've worked for Harley Davidson and Husqvarna and quite a few other motorcycle companies. And it was like over the course of a few years, but I always tell people, like, make sure you're doing your personal work and make sure you're pursuing your passions, because they have always led me to work I never thought was possible. Like my career is mainly in the motorcycle industry now, and that's purely because I was shooting for the love of riding motorcycles and capturing like what I was experiencing, never ever considering that that could be a career, because like it's not, you know, like shooting's women's motorcycling, it's like so specific, like who does that, but like I get to do that. So yeah,
it's a valuable lesson. I feel like I say this all the time. I tell Robert, like, I'm like, yeah, I got to do more personal projects. And, you know, somehow I find excuses not to do them, or, and, you know, now it's COVID and it's like, okay, there's another excuse. But it definitely inspires me to have people like you on the show talking about the value of personal projects. Do you have a percentage of the stuff that you shoot? Like, what's the percentage of client-based work versus personal project work?
Gosh, you know, it's funny. So I say that, right? But like over the last couple of years, like I've basically just been shooting for clients. Like I kind of forgot about my personal work because my personal work snowballed into my professional work, right? So I felt like I was kind of doing both at the same time, but it's really not the same. Like you shooting for yourself, even if it's the same content, is not you shooting for a client. So just during quarantine, actually, I've started to pick up personal work again. I just did like one surf shoot for the first time like a week or two ago, and I had so much fun just like with my friend, and I've just realized like how much I have kind of disregarded that part of myself because I felt like I was doing like both at the same time. So I go through phases of like being really good about doing personal work and then like completely ignoring it. I wish I was a little bit more consistent, but I think that's just like, it's kind of like an object in motion stays in motion. And like when you're busy with commercial work, that stuff gets pushed to the side and then it's kind of like hard to pick it back up. But, you know, one of the great things about this time is that I have time. So, yeah, I've been trying to do like more stuff for myself and not just motorcycle stuff either. The other day I was like hanging out with a friend of mine and she was asking me kind of like, oh, what are you doing like for work stuff? And I was like, well, you know, I'm shooting like my friend for fun. And she's like, yeah, but that's not work stuff. And I was like, yeah, but you know what? Like everything I've ever shot that's personal work, like eventually turns into like professional work. So right. Really like they go hand in hand, at least in my experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Kind of going back a little bit to the motorcycle phase, as you were talking about, it was personal work and then clients kind of started following that trail. Were you actively going out and like trying to find these events, or was it like these events are happening, people see you with a camera, and then you started the communication that way?
No, I feel extremely lucky and also unique in the way that most people I know have to kind of go out of their way to get work. For most of my career up until coronavirus, I was getting called. So I think it was just like the motorcycle industry is really tight. People either knew of me or saw my work, and they would just reach out to me because they know like I'm the girl that shoots like women's motorcycles, or I'm one of the people that shoots motorcycles, you know? So yeah, I feel like it's kind of like, again, like an object in motion stays in motion. Like I would be doing one job and then that would lead to another job, and things just happened like really naturally for me.
Yeah. I feel like once you get that momentum, it tends to, just keep going.
Yeah.
And I'm sure like your personal work, like you're saying, is one, it's just a creative outlet, and it's personal work is always more fun because there's less like risk, I guess, in a sense. But I'm sure the images that you create are going to show that excitement, that creativity, and it'll probably spark some new work coming your way. I have no doubt about it.
Thank you.
So I kind of want to talk a little bit about your transition from being the Vans in-house photographer to going full-time freelance. I think our audience is always kind of a mixture of people that want to do that or are in that transition.
Yeah.
So could you kind of walk us through that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I get into that story though, just because we were talking about like doing your passions and stuff and how that leads to work, like I do want to tell you guys a story about how I got my job at Vans. So I was working like as a freelancer / photo assist / dog walker, like, you know, right out of college and out of an internship as a photographer. And at the same time, I was playing roller derby at like a pretty top tier level in LA and with the LA Derby Dolls. So a lot of my photography mentors at that time were telling me like, you need to quit roller derby. like, you need to quit because this is taking up too much of your time and you need to be more available for photography and all this stuff. But I loved roller derby. It was like my life at the time. It was my motorcycling. And I was like, I'm not going to quit. This thing makes me like the happiest out of anything I've ever done. And because of that, I met a girl who worked at Vans. She was in the same league as me. And she and I weren't super tight or anything, but she just knew about me and she knew my work. And she put me in for that job at Vans. And eventually that's how I got into Vans. So if I had quit roller derby at the, at the request of my mentors to pursue photography, I wouldn't have ended up at Vans. Right. So I think that's another story kind of like showcasing why it's important to like do what you're passionate about.
Yeah, no, I think always following your passion, and that's a tough situation too, because, you know, you're coming out of an internship and you're having these mentors that are trying to push you or in a direction that maybe you don't want to go, and you're like caught in between a rock and a hard place. I'm actually looking at your website right now, and you have some great kind of roller derby skate shoes photos that I think have great energy and great color in it and great pop.
Yeah, those are kind of older, but they're still fun. But yeah, talking about my transition from Vans to freelance, everybody wants to hear about that. It's I loved working at Vans. I loved the people. Like, I loved having coworkers. My bosses were awesome, but I am just like not an indoor cat. Like, I not do well inside a building all day, especially inside a building without windows. I'm like an outdoor person through and through. And like, if you're going to work for any corporation, I feel like Vans is like the best possible corporation. Like, they have everything you could ask for. They got a gym, they got a skate park, they got a coffee shop, you know, they got like all the things you want in your workplace. They got the beanbag chairs, everything you could ask for, you know. Super yeah. Cool, super chill, like very relaxed environment. I loved my coworkers, but I was not doing well, like just being in an office. Like I just don't do well in like a controlled setting like that. So I knew at a certain point, like I wanted to transition into like more lifestyle photography, less product photography. And I got to a point where I just like couldn't wait any longer. So basically over the course of a year, I made plans to leave Vans. And it's crazy because I decided basically like I wasn't sure if I was going to be successful. So I decided I was going to buy a van, convert it into a living area, move into the van to reduce my overhead drastically while I built up my business. Started the conversion on that. At the same time I was doing that, I was trying to take as much freelance work as possible on top of my full-time job at Vans. So to kind of like start building up my momentum a little bit. And I redid my website. Like, I was going really hard at just like trying to build up my freelance business while I was at Vans. And then it got to a point where I had a job that was 2 weeks. And I knew that I could either take 2 weeks off vacation from Vans, but know I wouldn't have any time left to take off, or I could leave and take the money from that instead and just like start my career. And so I decided to leave. I felt at that point that I had enough work kind of like coming in. And then also my van wasn't quite ready, but I knew in the next couple months it would be ready for me to move in. And then that way my overhead would be way lower. And I had enough saved. That's the other thing. I saved a lot. I tried to save as much as I could during that last year at Vans with a full-time paycheck, knowing that I didn't know what was going to happen over the next year or so. So
yeah, you kind of built up like a big emergency fund.
Yes, exactly. Which, funny enough, I haven't had to touch until now. So like, thank God for that. But yeah, it ended up going like way better than I thought it would. I was so scared, dudes. You guys, like, you can't even like, I was so nervous. I lost so much weight. I was not sleeping at night. I was like am I stupid? Like, is this stressed about the van? The van wasn't ready. I thought I was going to have that build done in 4 months. It took me 9 months.
Wow.
And I thought, you know, and it was expensive. It was a lot more expensive than I thought it was going to be too. So I was like, is this thing going to cost me more than it would cost me to stay in my house? Is this stupid? Am I going to hate living in the van? Am I going to not get any work? What's going to happen? You know, like, I was so scared, but you know, you got to just try it, because I would have been way more bummed at myself if I hadn't tried it, as opposed to if I had tried it and failed. And luckily for me, my career just like took off. So I've been pretty busy up until coronavirus.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I love that story. Anybody that jumped into freelancing full time, I think it's just so fascinating to hear them talk about like what it meant to them, like emotionally going through that. And yeah, my experience was very similar in the sense of like just being filled with anxiety. I went the opposite route. I just gained a lot of weight, you know, so I kind of went the reverse there. What do you think was the, now that you've had a little bit of time removed from that moment of exodus, like, what do you see looking back as like, the hardest transition versus, let's say, something that came rather easily?
I think the hardest thing for me, honestly, is just not having any coworkers. Like,
gotcha.
I'm super social. And so working in isolation as much as I did, especially after going from like having all these friends at work all the time, like that was tough. But I definitely don't feel like I suffered much afterwards. I felt like stoked. I felt like I'd made the right choice, and it wasn't hard for me. I think for some people, they're more inclined to feel like they need a stable lifestyle. But for me, I actually thrive in some instability, and I think my life is made better for it. Nice. So yeah, I feel like it wasn't a hard transition. It was just leading up to that was hard. It was pushing the baby bird off the nest. Because I did not want to leave the nest. but once baby bird spread her wings, she was stoked.
Was there anything from a business perspective that kind of surprised you when you broke off on your own? You know, sometimes for us, it's like, you know, learning finances or incorporating or something. Was there anything that kind of took you by just kind of like a blindsided you a little bit?
I don't feel like it. I feel like I was really lucky actually to have the experience I had at Vans, because that gave me kind of an inside look at what companies are doing, like being on the opposite end of, cause I could kind of like see how they were communicating with their contractors. Right. And I could kind of see like kind of knew like about what they were making and kind of like the tricks that companies would do to like get you at a lower price or like, you know, you know, just like stuff you wouldn't see as a freelancer that you kind of see being on the inside of that, you know? I feel like that was really helpful to me to kind of like avoid a lot of pitfalls of like, oh, I'll work for this company for a low price and then eventually like move my way up to like a high price. Like, no, that's not going to happen. You know, like once they get you at a low price, you're not coming up. All of that was like really helpful. I feel like nothing was like terribly shocking to me.
Well, that's good. Yeah. And that's a great lesson to learn, is just that. And I feel like that's something that a lot of us need reminding of, that, you know, starting off low doesn't usually work. That corporate ladder doesn't usually work. So you learn that from just how Vans was working with their contractors, and you took a lot from that. That's great advice. Great feedback.
I don't feel like they were being, you know, dishonest or anything like that. I just feel like, you know, they had their photographers, they had their top tier photographers, and they were a certain price and they only got hired for certain jobs. And then they had lower tiered photographers and they were like, oh, we know if we have a shoot that has this budget, we can call these people. And you're never going to go from being like a small budget photographer to like a big budget photographer if you've already like told them you're a small budget photographer. So for me, it's like, I want to be a big budget photographer. Maybe that means that I only get hired like once or twice a year, but I'd much rather be doing that and have more time on my hands than like trying to do all these little jobs, you know?
Totally. So that's really interesting. They had little like kind of buckets where they would say, okay, here's our low tier photographers, here's our mid tier and high tier.
I mean, this is all like stuff I'm not really supposed to know. And I think nobody like explicitly told me, right? But from being on sets and stuff, like that's kind of the feeling that I got is like they had people that were like their brand campaign photographers, and then they had people that were their like stuff that's like a little bit less important than that, and the pricing was way different. But I just know that if you go into something being like, oh yeah, I can do this for free for one time, or I can do this for $200 one time, like you're never gonna like come out of that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Kind of, you know, having that behind the scenes knowledge, has that really helped you with your negotiating tactics of maybe being like firmer or maybe coming in with a little bit higher? And can you kind of talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, something I've been seeing a lot actually during coronavirus, because like there's, you know, jobs are, a lot of jobs are put on hold. All my jobs are canceled for the most part for the last couple months. So people are getting desperate and they're like I got a call the other day from someone who asked me to do a shoot, and I gave them my price and they were like, oh, we really don't have like money for that. And they wanted it done actually for free, which I was kind of like, ah, nah, I'm not doing that. And then I saw like a few days later, a friend of mine did that shoot, and I don't want to like put them on blast, but like they are they're great photographers. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, cause I think the misconception is like, I'm going to do this for free, or I'm going to do this for cheap. They're going to like my work, and then they're going to pay me. But the reality is they know they can get you for cheap, so they're not going to pay you. And I think the respect also, like if you only respect yourself as a trade photographer, or you only respect yourself as a low budget photographer, everybody around you is only going to respect you for that also, for that price also. Yeah. You have to believe in yourself first for other people to believe in yourself. So I will say to everyone out there who's feeling desperate, Nancy, just like fucking hold on. Hold on. Because you don't want to lower your prices because you're scared, and you don't want to make it harder for everybody else too. Yeah, that would be my advice.
Yeah, no, I think everybody's kind of in that boat right now of like, oh man, we thought this was going to be over in like 2 months, then 4 months, and it's been almost a year now, it seems like. And it's just, yeah, like I think all freelancers kind of need to hold the fort, you know, and just like, no, we're going to make through this. We're not going to cut. We're not going to work for Instagram credit because that doesn't pay bills.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think there's so much there, like the psychology of like, you know, who sets the anchor price, right? Like, you know, so if you set it low, that's just what people are going to see you as. And that's just going to what they gravitate towards. It's like, well, you know, you're $200, maybe we got 250 for you, but really that jump from 200 to 5,000 is never going to happen.
Yeah, no. And I'm not saying like, you know, when I was first starting out, like I did internships, I did like stuff for cheap, but it's a different thing if you've been in the industry for a long time and you've established yourself. Like, I just don't recommend like taking a step back. I just think it's really important to kind of like hold your ground. Everything's going to be okay. People are going to need content again, you know, like, I don't want to be taking steps back right now, you know?
Do you have a piece of advice, or is there like a favorite little thing that you do when somebody says, hey, you know, our budget is, you know, 50% of what your asking price is? How do you respond to that? What's like one of those tactical responses that you give?
Well, there's a couple different options. Like, say my price is something and they give me back, they said, we only have 50%, right? Mm-hmm. You can always offer to shoot 50% of that, whatever that means. Maybe that means like cutting your crew and doing like a bare bones shoot. Maybe that means like you give them less edits. Maybe that means that you're only doing like 3 locations instead of 6 locations.
Yeah.
I think there's ways to meet in the middle without devaluing yourself, you know? Certainly there's jobs where it's just like not worth it. And that's not like a knock on the company. It's just like, that's your price, you know? But I think that for a lot of things, if you can find a happy middle ground, that's definitely possible without, again, like overworking yourself or devaluing yourself or making pennies on the hour because you accidentally committed to too much for too little.
Right. Love it.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good way to look at things. Cause I feel like when I was first starting out, people would be like, okay, like here's like half, and you're like, okay. And like you have that tendency to just say yes to it. But as you grow and realizing that like there is there's a medium, you know, and people are, they're not trying to disrespect you, but it's, they're doing their job of bean counting and trying to make sure their budget works. And yeah, it's like, yeah, okay, if you want half, then cool, I don't need that assistant. And yeah, you're not going to get 6 locations and,
yeah,
you know, 400 photos or whatever.
Right.
Like, let's scale this back and let's make it work.
Right.
So I kind of want to ask a little bit about your van life experience.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel that there's definitely a lot of pros of, you know, lower overhead, mobility, maybe you could just drive to shoots. Are there definite pros and cons to that lifestyle?
Absolutely. I loved living in my van. It was super fun. Again, like I thrive in a little bit of discomfort. I'm also super outdoorsy. So like when you live in your van, you're spending a lot of your time outside. And another pro too, like you said, is like if I had a job in Oregon that I could afford, or like if I had the time to drive up to Oregon, I would just drive up there and I would be able to have my setup and everything with me and my dog and all of that. And it would be chill. The hardest part I found about doing the van was having a dog, because I live in Southern California and in the summer it gets hot. So you can't leave like your dog at all during the day. So there's a lot of times where I would have to like find a place to put her, or just kind of miss out on stuff because I couldn't leave her by herself. I was really lucky at that time. Michael and I were dating. So many times when I had shoots during the day, I would just leave her at his house, and it was chill. But if I hadn't had him as like a resource to lean on, I think it would have cost me a lot in doggy daycare, or it would have been much more difficult. That was definitely like the hardest part. I think if it wasn't for Bandit, I would have been more inclined to continue doing van life. However, she provided a great sense of security for me, because she's a gnarly barker when somebody comes to the door, and she's a protector. And as a single woman, I felt a lot more safe camping and traveling with her than I would have by myself. You know, pros and cons to having a dog in the van. obviously, too, the bathroom situation's a little tricky, especially as a woman. But I never found it to be, like, overwhelming. You know, there was always something close by I could use. I have no problem, like, going outside if I'm in a wilderness area. Yeah, I never found that to be, like, an extremely big issue. But yeah, it was so fun. Like I traveled so much that year. The funny thing is I traveled a lot outside of the van just for work. I was kind of flying all over the place. And I also feel a little bit like I cheated, because like I was probably home around like 25 to 50% of the first year of my freelance career. So, a lot of the time I was spent like in hotels or in, like Airbnbs that like clients had put me up in and stuff. So I wasn't doing van life like as much as I thought I was going to, because I was working so much, which is great. But yeah, definitely like when I did have time to travel or I did have time to take my van to shoot, like it was awesome. Like I had everything with me at all times. I surf too. So it's great to just be able to like take the van to the beach and go surfing and then be able to cook your own food, or bring your own food to shoot. And yeah, I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, that mobility is so, like, I'm so envious of that, like, that lifestyle. I think that's such a cool idea, and such a, I will not say that you cheated yourself. Like, I think anybody that has the guts to move into a van, like, I think that's awesome. You know, it just takes so much, like, sense of security.
Yeah.
Knowing that, you know, your equipment's there, your life's there, and everything. I think that's really impressive.
Yeah. I had a storage unit that I would put like some of my extra equipment in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by my extra equipment, I mean like my one other lens or whatever. But, yeah. I mean, it was great. I would have probably continued to do it. But the way things happened just with coronavirus and everything, I'm so grateful that I moved into this space right before, because, you know, normally when I work, I would go to a coffee shop or go to the library. Mm-hmm. And when I'd shower, I would go, I mean, I went to Mike's house a lot, but in theory, you know, you go to a gym or whatever, and those things are not available to people right now. So I feel for people living in their vans right mm-hmm. now, or people that are like homeless right now, you know, or living in their vans, not by choice. Like, it's gotta be a really tough time to do that. Cause there's nowhere you can go. There's nowhere you can go. Just use the bathroom, you know?
No, totally.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a tricky situation.
I'm curious about your kind of your visual process and your preparation. Do you storyboard? Do you mood board? What's that kind of preparation like?
It depends. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. And that's true for my personal work and that's true for my clients. Like, normally when I'm working with clients, I will ask for some kind of mood board or storyboard. But if it's a client I've worked with quite a bit, like Vans or like one of my other clients I work with all the time, like I kind of know what they're going for, you know?
Yeah.
Same with like my personal work, like the motorcycle stuff, I kind of know what I'm looking for now. So I don't really need to like mood board or storyboard for that. Stuff like surf photography, stuff that I'm kind of new at, I'll look online or do a Pinterest board or something like that. But I would say more often than not, I'm not a storyboarder.
Gotcha. And do you spend like a lot of time scouting locations that you really know, like the backdrops for whatever lifestyle you're going to shoot?
It depends. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. I feel like a location scout is a real luxury. There's a lot of shoots that I don't get to location scout because they're out of state or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like the last couple of shoots I did do location scout for. I will probably location scout for my personal shoot coming up. So more and more, I think as I get older, I enjoy location scouting much more than kind of doing it on the fly. It feels less stressful. So yeah.
So speaking a little bit of your process, when you're out working for a client, do you have a checklist of photos like, okay, I need close-ups, I need verticals, I need horizontals, I need wides, or are you... Is that something that you discuss with them and, or is it just kind of, you feel things out?
No, I definitely discuss it beforehand. Okay. I try to find out like what their exact needs are. And then I do make a checklist to make sure that I've like met all their needs. I feel like that's super important because you don't want to like have a miscommunication or leave something out and not know you left something out, you know? And that way too, I try to do everything through email too. Cause that way they can't come back at you and say, oh, you didn't get the shot. It's like, well, you never told me to get the shot, you know?
I mean, you have it in writing.
Yeah, you get it in writing. I get everything in writing.
No, I definitely think that's something that I've learned the hard way is get it in writing, you know, and also that communications, because they could be thinking one thing and visually you're thinking another thing, and it's hard to kind of communicate that sometimes over a telephone call.
Yeah, absolutely. And even if I have a telephone call, I'll still request like a written shot list or what their expectations are, you know?
Yeah. In terms of that shot list, when a client says, okay, this is what we're looking for, what kind of ratio do you find, or what's the balance there between people that are very type A specific of we need this shot specifically versus we just look for this type of feeling. We want, you know, that natural light lifestyle look or whatever. How do they articulate what they're looking for to you?
You know, what's interesting is like, so when I was doing like mostly product, like obviously people have like very specific requests, right? Like you need to get the front back macro, blah, blah, blah. Like we need it this size and we need text over here. And like, I definitely still feel like I get that during lifestyle. Like some people might need text on one side or they need horizontals or they need verticals, but mostly it's just like, get a range of everything and like do your thing. I feel like with lifestyle, it's like a lot more loose. You just want to make sure you have like room on one side or the other, you know, some shots with that, some shots horizontal, some shots vertical, some macro, some product, some lifestyle, you know, it's like get a good mix of everything and mm-hmm. you're covered.
Do you feel like it's important to be really good shooting in natural conditions without like artificial lighting to be a lifestyle photographer? Because I feel like a lot of clients want this quality of look that is natural. Everything has to be natural. And things that look very strobey tend to take away from that. Do you feel like that's like something that is articulated by your clients, or it's just something that you've noticed?
Well, I think, I mean, most of my work now is in natural light. And so I think people come to me for that, right? Like, they know what they're getting with me. All of that to say, like, I am pretty proficient in strobes and artificial light. And I think that right now the like natural light Instagram lifestyle thing is really hip, but it's really only a matter of time before that's not the thing anymore. And gotcha. I think also really, it's like definitely important to learn to shoot in natural light, but I think that's actually way easier than being able to shoot with artificial light. And I also feel like it's really important to learn both, because like, even as a photographer at Vans, like I would need to hire contractors or need to hire like an assistant for myself or someone to cover me, right? Like if I go on vacation. And the amount of people that could shoot natural light but couldn't shoot artificial light, it's like staggering. And I feel like that's kind of what's going to set you apart. Like, I have a friend right now that's even, he's a really great photographer, and he's got like a big interview coming up. And he shoots mostly natural light, but they're asking him to do a test for like an interview that requires, for like a big thing that requires strobe. And again, like to me, that points to like, you should learn both.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like, I feel really strongly about that. I think that's what's going to set you apart.
It's good
advice. Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that, because it's like another tool in the tool belt, yeah. You know, and especially I do think it does kind of separate you from the pack a little bit, and it's always nice to have the ability to change up your style.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're going one way, like you said, the lifestyle look right now is what's in vogue, but then that could change to something 2 years from now.
I feel like a lot of what I'm seeing right now is kind of going back to that kind of like on camera flash, shoot from the hip, like,
oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Look, you know what I mean? And so I can already see it. Like, it's like trends are changing, you know? I think it's important to know, like, to know how to do as much. Yeah. Like you can't, like you said, just add it to your toolbox.
Right. How do you describe your editing style? Is there a lot there, or is it pretty minimalist?
No, I do quite a bit of editing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have like presets that I've made. I guess, I don't know. 'Cause sometimes I see videos of people doing their edits and I don't do as much as they do. So maybe not. Yeah, I have presets I've made, and I usually kind of just like mess around with those in Lightroom. And beyond that, I don't do much. I mean, definitely for like a commercial client, I'll do skin retouching and all the hair and all that stuff too, you know. But I think people like the style that I shoot is mainly, like you said, like lifestyle, kind of like in the moment. And that doesn't usually require like a ton of editing. I'm a big color person. Like, my color is pretty specific. I like my work to look like candy. And so I'm pretty, you know, consistent about that. But beyond that, I don't have to do too much, I don't think.
Can you kind of describe that candy look? Like, what is that something you're looking for? Like, okay, it's magic hour, or, you know, these are the right colors? Like, what do you mean by that?
So like, I think a lot of this comes from my background. So I used to work for a pinup photographer named Riley Kern. And I was really into like, it's super studio, like super monochromatic, like really bright, kind of like David LaChapelle, like super like contrasty, like beautiful, like colorful photography. And I like loved it. And I used to shoot that way too. And I feel like I've brought a lot of that same style kind of into my current photography, where my color is very like poppy and kind of like a little saturated and like a little contrasty. And I definitely like obviously love Golden Hour, because come on. And yeah, I just feel like that's kind of like the space I tend to gravitate towards.
Golden Hour will never go out of vogue, I feel like. That's always going to be good.
Get harder on yourself, like
yeah,
when you can just use God's light.
Yep.
so going way back to that internship, or the working at that pinup place, like, were there some things that you learned, like how to work with models, that's transitioned into your career?
So when I was in college at Orange Coast, I was introduced to this photographer I loved. Her name's Riley Kern. you look up Riley Kern Studio, her work will show up. And she did like 1950s style pinup photography. So I got hooked up with her through a teacher of mine who knew I loved her work. I interned for her for about a year, and then I worked for her for like a few years after that as her first assistant in her intern, or I guess not intern, I guess as her first assistant. So I learned so much about artificial light through her, and definitely like how to work with models, how to, you know, how to do the contracts, like how to do the production, all of that. Like, I feel like an internship is so valuable if you can, manage it. Like, a lot of kids actually will ask me like, do I go to art school? And I always tell them like, no, like, unless you have the money for that right now, do not go to art school. Like, because you're going to come out with a huge bill, and like, it's fucking hard to make it in photography. It's like asking to be a rock star. So my advice is always find a photographer you love and pester them nicely and work for them for free for a little bit. And then eventually maybe get hired to work for them as their first assistant or their second assistant, third assistant, something like that. And I know I just said don't work for free, but I think that when you're just starting out and you're learning, it's almost like getting school for free. So instead of paying tens of thousands of dollars or hundreds of thousands of dollars to go to art school, you're learning from someone who's doing it, who's in the business, who can teach you about lighting and teach you about directing models and teach you about production, and you don't have to pay anything for that. And that's invaluable. Totally. So,
yeah. What do you, what was the thing that you, is there anything that you really rely on in terms of working with models or working with people that aren't models, but you still have to like kind of convey that they are? What's one of those tips that you might kind of rely on from your experience?
Oh gosh. I mean, this sounds like obvious, but I think just being like super nice and friendly, you know, and like complimenting them and directing them, you know, if I think people want to be directed to some degree, if they're not professional models specifically, like they need a little bit of help. So kind of like intuitively, like knowing when to help them or when to let them kind of like do their thing, I think is helpful. I think just being like cheerful and respectful and friendly is also helpful. I think sometimes I'll be like, this looks so great. You're doing so great. This looks gorgeous. It looks beautiful. You know, it sounds cheesy, but it makes them feel better. You know, you're doing such a great job. Like, I just like believe in like positive words of affirmation. And if they're struggling, just like help them out a little bit. One of the things I actually learned in doing my internship with Riley, because she would have me model quite a bit at a certain point. And I learned being on the other, what that feels like being on the other side and how vulnerable that feels and how awkward that can feel. And also like what I didn't like and what I did like when people were directing me. So I feel like being on the other side of that for a few years was like extremely beneficial to me as a photographer in the ways of like how to talk to other models.
Yeah, no, I think it's a good experiment to do every now and then, is to put yourself on the other side of the camera and just realize like it's very vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, like part of the reason we chose being photographers is because we like, you know, either we're shy and we like to hide behind the camera and create, and it's like when you're in front of it, you're just like, oh man, this is a totally different beast.
Oh, yeah.
And I like how you said like, yeah, you're vulnerable and you learn how to take, you know, direction, and that really like transitions to you making your models or the people you're photographing more comfortable. Because I think one of the worst things you could say is like, oh, just be normal, just be yourself. Yeah. And you're like, you tense up.
Yeah,
it's just not enough direction for some people. You know, for others, it's like they understand what their hits are going to be. But, you know, for a lot of us, it's like, yeah, I don't know what you're looking for. So give me something and then tell me that I'm doing great, even if I'm doing terrible. You know, that's just how it is.
Sometimes
good.
Oh no, I was gonna say sometimes too, I'll step in and be like, can you try this? Like, I'll actually do what I'm asking them to do, so it feels like less awkward, you know? Like, if I can do it, you can do it, you know? Kind of like, so yeah. And the other thing I think that's important to talk about too, I feel like there's this kind of misconception that models are these like super beautiful, confident people, right? They're like hired for their beauty, and so they like are super like confident in what they do. But what I've realized over time is like, these people are just as insecure as you and I, And maybe even more so because, you know, their fucking bodies and faces are under the microscope all damn day. And people are constantly feeling like they can just make comments in front of them about how too fat they are or whatever, you know? And it's like, because that's their job, right? But they're still human. And so I feel like it's important to recognize, like, they're humans. They have feelings. They have insecurities. They might look freaking amazing, but they still have things that they're worried about, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Going back to your kind of production, I know that you work rather minimalistly, but in terms of your ideal creative team, like, who would you have on set? Who would be indispensable for you if budget were no issue?
If budget were no issue? Gosh, that's a really hard question because I mostly work in a pretty small crew or with myself. So I guess it depends on the job.
Okay.
If budget were no issue and I could do it myself, I'd probably just do it myself and keep the budget. I have a first assistant, obviously, right? For most of my work. For a lot of my work, I shouldn't say most of my work. And I'd probably bring him on. I've been hiring my partner, Michael. He's a photographer too. So I've just been hiring him as my first assistant, which is great because then like that budget just goes to us. But he's also a professional and he knows what he's doing. So I trust him and we work really well together, which is such a blessing. I had a friend named Spencer who passed away last year, unfortunately, but he was like an incredible digital technician and I could never afford him. Right. So budget was indispensable, or if we had a huge budget and he was still with us, I would absolutely hire Spencer. But I don't know that I know the answer to that. I think it would just depend on the job.
Right.
So kind of going off budget here, I'm going to try to make a transition. We've talked about, you know, past school, and let's look way out into the future, maybe like 30, 40 years from now. Do you ever plan on retiring, or do you just plan on dying with a camera in your hands?
That's a great question. So I'm like not somebody who looks very far ahead, and I don't know if that's good or bad, but so far it's like worked for me. I'm probably like, I look like a year or so ahead, if that. And I've never really thought about retirement. So I don't know that I could answer that because I feel like every year I change so much as a person. I have no idea who I'm going to be in like 50 years or I don't know, even 10 years, even 5 years. Mm-hmm. So I don't think about retirement, which is probably not great financial advice. You should probably think about retirement. But that's the honest truth.
Well, you know what? You're the voice of the people right now, because I think most people don't think about that.
Yeah.
You know, regardless of what age, I think it's the data shows that most people aren't thinking a whole lot about it, or maybe not enough. And but I do like your window, like that 1 year advance, because you do think enough in the future when you moved into your van and you started to think about like, okay, I have a year to get out of vans and, you know, create this kind of freelance life. So there is foresight there. It's just not that like, you know, 40, 50 years from now.
My dad always says life is what happens when you're busy making plans. And I feel like so much of my life has been so different from what I thought it would be, but in the best way. Like I couldn't have predicted that it would end up like this. And if I had planned it, it wouldn't have ended up like this. So I feel like I have to kind of take into consideration what's happening around me and what inspires me, and then kind of like make plans from that.
Mm-hmm. In terms of marketing, I know that you've received a lot of calls yourself. Is there any proactive marketing that you do that you feel like is a really high ROI for you? Like, is it print? Is it just phone calls, social? What do you think has been the best form of marketing for you?
For sure, I don't think I would be here without social media, which I hate to say because, you know, social media is kind of hard for a lot of people, myself included, just mentally. And I've definitely had to create boundaries around it. But I think a lot of my work and a lot of my success is because of my social media. And I'm not like, I don't have 100,000 followers. I think I have like 13,000 followers, which like in the media world isn't that much. But it was enough and it was specific enough where I think I gained a lot of traction from that. The only other thing I really do is reach out to people that I either know, have worked with, or know someone who knows someone at like a company through email, and I'll email them and, you know, send them whatever I'm trying to pitch to them, or just say, hey, how's it going? But I feel very unique and also lucky in a way that I haven't had to do a ton of marketing, again, up until like a few months ago, because everything just kind of like naturally happened, which I know is very unique. And I hope that that doesn't make anybody feel bad, because that's very rare. yeah, I just feel like the last year has kind of just taken care of itself, or the year, you know, before pre-coronavirus, I should say, mm-hmm. took care of itself.
And when you're talking about social media, like specifically, you're looking at, is Instagram your biggest kind of social media vehicle?
Yes, specifically Instagram. I'm not on Facebook really, and I'm not really on anything else, which I should be better about, but I'm just not.
Gotcha. And so what do you think that has worked for you specifically in that Instagram area? Is it just posting consistently? Is it just posting pretty pictures, or is it, you know, tagging the right people? What specifically do you feel like has really worked?
You know, I'm not like a social media guru at all. Like I wish I was better at this. I should probably hire someone, to be honest.
I think you're doing well.
Thank you. I've basically got my followers from posting photos whenever I feel like posting photos, and that's it. You know, there's definitely times like, I'm trying to, like right now I'm trying to post one a day, and like I've just recently started like planning it out, which takes like quite a few hours for me to do. Like I downloaded a grid, so I have it planned, and I actually was using an app called Later to post for me. Like I would write my caption and have it set to a time, but Instagram like punishes you if you use like a third party app. I got like banned from Instagram for a while and all this stuff. So I couldn't use that anymore. But I do plan my grid, or when I'm good at it, I plan my grid and then I try to post once a day. And I know with like the algorithm stuff, at least from what I've heard, the more you use it, the more you post, the more you comment, the more you like, the more your shit's going to be seen. But I can't be on Instagram all day. It's not good for me. So I just do the best I can, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think your work on Instagram is very organic looking. And I don't mean that like it's planned, but it just looks very much like, oh, I like this photo. This is where I'm at. This is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Like these are awesome videos. And I think that like honesty in it and that feel and that vibe is what attracts people to it, because it doesn't seem like you're trying to promote yourself. You're like, this is just me. This is what I do. I take great photos, by the way. And
yeah,
I know. I hope you like this page.
Something that I hear a lot about my Instagram and stuff, people say that they feel I'm very genuine and very authentic. And I certainly try to be that way. I try to be real. I try to be genuine and authentic. I try not to bullshit you guys. So I feel like that is also part of my brand and part of what people like about working with me.
I have a few questions left for you. What's the best piece of advice or your favorite piece of advice that you've ever gotten?
Oh, gosh. I feel like I know the answer to this, but like, of course I'm blanking. Yeah, okay. You know what? I don't think anybody ever told me this, so this is advice straight from me.
Nice. But, I love it.
But I think it's really important to listen to your gut and listen to your intuition. And even when the whole world around you is saying, what the fuck are you doing? You're quitting Vans to move into your van and freelance. Fucking crazy. Like, people, that's a dream job for people, right? Like, I've made that couple decisions like that in my life where people are like, what are you doing? But I just knew, I felt aligned in it, and I knew it was right for me, and I knew it was like the right step. And even if I failed, like I knew I could live with myself more so than just being stagnant at a company I'd been with for 4 years and wasn't really going to get any better at, you know? And that's just one example of like weird things I've done that don't make sense to anybody else but me, but like in the long run have helped me. So I feel like it's really important to just like get in touch with who you are and listen to your intuition above your rational.
Yeah, no, I think I feel like that's hard to do, you know, but, and it's funny that you're saying like you've had a couple of those decisions, but it tends to work out, because it's tough when people, I'm sure people are like, you're leaving Vans, like that office environment's awesome. It's, you know, bring your dog to work on Fridays.
It's a dream job.
You're going to give up that security.
Yeah, it's a total dream job. Like, nobody understands that, but but it's paid off. It's paid off. And it's funny because people ask me now, even like, oh, you regret leaving now that it's coronavirus and there's no workout for anybody? And like, we're all kind of stuck in this weird limbo. And I'm like, absolutely not. Like, I loved my time at Vans. I'm so grateful for that time, but it was time for me to go. And I had one of the best years of my life. And I honestly, guys, like, as a freelancer, I've been preparing for a slow time for a long time. So this is obviously like extreme. It's just like you're like freelance. It's slow. It's a couple slow months. Like, we're in a freaking pandemic and everything's happening around us. But mentally, I've been preparing for this time for a long period. So I definitely have dark days where I freak out, but the majority of me is like, this is normal. This is a normal part of being a freelancer. And you've prepared for this to some degree. You'll be fine. You know, you have your plan. You can always move back into that if you need to.
No, that's important to note for anybody that's looking to kind of venture into working on their own, being self-employed. It's like, you just kind of try to prepare, certainly mentally, you know, if not financially, but like definitely mentally for those lulls.
Mentally, I would recommend, if possible, because it's not if, it's when you're going to have a slow time. And that's okay. It's totally normal. It's a totally normal part of being a freelancer.
Yeah. Kind of going off on that, what do you think is the best thing about lifestyle photography, and what's the worst thing?
I love being outdoors. Like, as I told you before, like, I was really suffering being inside all day. So being able to like shoot outside, go on adventures, go ride my motorcycle and like be paid to do all these things. It's like a freaking dream, you know? Like, I love traveling. I love meeting new people. It like hits all the things I love. It's super, super fun. So I like roughing it. Like, it's definitely my brand of life, of photography and just lifestyle. The worst thing about it. Let me think about that. I guess, you know, it's pretty competitive. It's a competitive field because it is so like, oh no, you know what? I take that back. I'll tell you the worst thing about it. It is very hard to be in a serious relationship and be gone half the time. And my partner is super sweet, super great guy, puts up with a lot, very understanding. And he, like, he's a traveler, he's a photographer, he gets it. But I'll tell you, it has put stress on our relationship at times, and we've had to overcome that. And it's a lot to ask someone, like, I'm going to be gone 50% of the time. Can you take care of my dog and like not date anybody else, you know? That's a lot to ask. So, and also even just with my friendships and stuff, it's put strain on all of those things because I'm gone. So one thing I will say that, again, this time has provided me is a lot of time with my loved ones, time with my friends, again, in a way I haven't had in a long time with Michael. And that's been really great to have. But I'm definitely going to go back as soon as I can, you know, to that work, if it's still out there, which I think it is. That's definitely the hardest part, I think.
Okay, so we've talked about successes, and I always think we learn a lot more from our mess-ups or failures or struggles.
Yeah.
What's one of your biggest either screw-ups or failures that you've had along your journey?
I am sure that I have had major screw-ups or failures. But my brain, I'm very, very, very forgetful. That's actually why I started taking photos, just to remember things. Like, I have like a really weird thing where I forget stuff all the time. And I think that my brain likes to especially forget things that I did bad, you know, or didn't do quite well. So I have to think about that, because I've actually thought about this a lot, because this is obviously like a question that comes up. And I know that I've like fucked up some shit before, but I can't remember, you know, like I can't remember like what's a time that like I really learned from.
That's a really good piece of advice to like kind of just move past your mistakes and be like, okay, don't dwell on it. I just forgot about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if it's a choice. It's just like my weird. I'm definitely not perfect, and I've definitely made mistakes. I just like can't remember what like that one thing is.
Honestly, that's kind of a superpower, the ability to just like, okay, it's gone, on to the next one, not dwell on it.
And I'm sure I'll make mistakes in the future, you know, that's just like, we're humans, it happens. So
And Genevieve, I have one last question for you. Basically, you know, I like to give our audience like some sort of takeaway. What would you tell aspiring photographers that want to venture into commercial lifestyle, from, let's say, something like events, and they want to venture into this, or they're doing portraits and they want to do something like this? What would you tell them to start working on, to make that transition easier and successful?
Just shoot. Shoot what you want to be shooting. Shoot a lot of it, because people are going to hire you for what you put out into the world. And if you're shooting events and you want to shoot lifestyle and you're putting out events, you're going to get hired for shooting events. So I would just say, shoot as much as you can on your off time, whatever, and just keep putting it out there. And the other piece of advice I would give is, again, like, if you're at a stage in your life where this makes sense, if you can find someone who's doing what you want to be doing and contact them and see if you can work for them for free, or take them to coffee and pick their brain, or be their first assistant or the second assistant on something and get paid to do that, like, learn from them. Those are the two pieces of advice I would give.
Awesome.
No, I think that's great advice. Before we wrap things up, is there anything you'd like to leave on, and where can people, I know we mentioned it earlier, but where can people find you online?
My website is GenevieveDavisPhoto.com, and my Instagram is @Genevieve_Davis. We just said that. I think I just want to say Black Lives Matter, and solidarity to all the athletes that are on strike right now. And I really appreciate them in this moment.
I love it. I think that's such an important thing to know. And I do want to ask you, just because you mentioned it, you know, do you feel like that now is such a particular time where people are almost like either walking on eggshells, or they're going the opposite route? You know, how does that impact your branding, you know, to be vocal or to not be vocal? And I know a lot of artists, I know a lot of people that are trying to navigate that way. But I'm glad that you brought it up, and I appreciate your opinions on that.
Yeah, you know, okay, so as I said before, I try to be genuine and authentic. So my social media has been very vocal for a long time. So I feel like everyone following me kind of already knows where I'm at politically, and they're not going to be shocked if I come out and say something, you know? I just believe I have a small platform, and I need to use it for good. And if that means that I lose a few clients along the way, so be it. And I understand that not everybody has the privilege of making that decision, but I do. So yeah. I'm going to use it. And I just think it's important to talk about right now, and important to acknowledge. And it's been a long time coming. And I think one of the upsides of coronavirus is this movement. I don't feel like this would have happened without the virus. I feel like people are so busy just in their day-to-day, just trying to stay afloat, that we don't normally have time to reflect on social justice issues. And this isn't new. It's just right now we're facing it in a way where we can't ignore it. So I have hope. I mean, I was really sad a couple of days ago after Jacob Blake, and then to find out that the NBA is striking their playoff games, like, that is freaking major, dudes. Like, I know you guys know that because you're in sports. I know Robert's in sports, at least. But see, that to me, it signifies that there's a major shift going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's so awesome seeing people give their voice, because I think that's valuable. And, you know, it really is exploiting a lot of people that have always said, well, we appreciate diversity of thought, but they don't really, you know, because then they get super upset about what people are saying. So I really respect, you know, your feelings on that. I echo those as well. And, you know, I do think it takes some courage to, it's a different type of courage, but to voice those when you know that business is on the line. But to that point, I think you said it well, like maybe sometimes if you lose clients, those may not be the clients that you wanted anyways.
Yeah. And that's not to say you have to be disrespectful or abrasive or, you know, name calling or anything like that. I think there's a way to take a stand and it's going to offend some people, but sure. not in a way where you go home at the end of the day and you feel bad about yourself. Like you said exactly what you had to say, and you did it in a respectful manner, and you can sleep with yourself at night, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. No, I definitely applaud your courage to say these things and take the stand. And you've, like you said, it hasn't just been recent. Like this has been who you are, and you're very about, this is just me and this is my voice. And I like the fact that you're like, I have a small platform, but with this platform, you know, I could do good and not be complicit or complacent, you know?
Yeah.
So Genevieve, I just want to thank you once again for joining us on this podcast.
Thank you guys so much. It's been great. Me. It was so lovely.
it was wonderful having you. I really loved a lot of your insight and your experiences. This was just fantastic to listen to you talk.
Oh, great.
So that looks like it's going to wrap it up for us today. Michael and I hope you've enjoyed the show. Don't forget to check us out at media1099.com or our social media on Instagram at media1099podcast. This is Robert Husky signing off with Michael Durr, and we will catch you on the next episode.